Hello, everybody, and welcome to TYH. My name is Anglo, and with me I have Nike.
Hello.
What's up, my friend? Is that a good Greek impression, or what?
It could be any generic, like, Mediterranean to Middle Eastern person who's, like, you know, a stranger to you but wants to sell you something.
Or a Slav, maybe?
Yeah. Slavs don't have anything to sell you. They just, you know, want your company.
And your bicycle.
What are they? Are Slavs African now?
No, I'm just trying to think of some stereotypes like for my German family about Poles or something. I don't know. Polak
stole my bike.
But it's a nice Friday. You know, I'm chilling down. Not that it was hot, but that's just how I say chilling. I'm trying to speak like the kids now.
He's chilling down. With the homies. Because he's so friggity fresh.
Yeah. So friggity fresh. But has your day been good, my friend?
It has.
What did you eat? Because this is a food podcast, primarily.
Oh, I had a little
Taco Bell. Yeah, I guessed it right. I guessed it right. Did you get a potato taco? The $1?
Did you guess it?
Did you get one of those $1 potato tacos?
No, I got the black bean
race trader
crunch wrap. Because I am back on the fast again. This time for the Dormition fast.
But I ate a feta cheese sandwich. It was an invention I made. Someone's already probably made it. Probably not even new, but
cheese on bread? I don't think that's been done before.
Well, it's two slices of bread, toasted, and in the middle, just a big whole bunch of feta cheese, melted a little bit in the microwave.
I don't know, man. I've never heard of that.
That's all I had. And it was pretty good, because I like feta cheese.
You should try to sell that, you know, or copyright the idea. Cheese on bread. An Anglo original.
Cheese, beans and toast with feta.
I saw a screenshot this week, and I don't know if it's real, but I have no reason to doubt it at this point, of a dish called bread dip.
It sounds good.
And it's another fine example of Anglo cuisine.
Actually sounds, is it like, what is it?
It's bread in water that's boiled.
I mean... Sometimes you just got to eat bread and water.
Boiled. Oh, it's bread sauce. It's a British warm or cold sauce made with milk, which is thickened with breadcrumbs. Typically eaten with roast chicken or turkey. So it's kind of like a gravy.
Yeah, it's just like a...
It's like a stuffing gravy.
It's like an alternative way to make gravy. It's probably not bad. Come on.
It's like, hey, I have milk. I have bread. Why don't I just put it in water that's either hot or cold? And then I can pour that over meat.
Yeah, it seems like an alternative way of making gravy. I mean,
Norwegian people be like, that sounds too spicy for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't need to put spice in our food because it's not rotten.
Well, yeah, Norwegians have a different definition of spicy. That's just like fermented, a.k.a. rancid.
Okay, whatever. So we're gonna move on to the section of the podcast where we read your comments. There's a lot of them, more or less, but let's get started. So Ben Menlock says, where's the episode? And here it is.
It's right here.
Martin Heidegger says, fascination on a Saturday plus TYH, nice. And I replied, it's because we live in the best of all possible worlds. And of course, in that sentiment of excitement, question mark says, I'm excited. This is when we first uploaded, first comments. So, yeah. House Wolf says, people are listening.
That's true.
I don't know what that... Yes, they're listening to the... I don't know.
Niggas be listening.
So in the last episode, I guess we made fun of... Boomer posting, and one of our fans created his own boomer post. I think it's for Unique. I think you should read it. It's from Johnny or Janoy Cresva.
Thank you, Nike, for exposing the liberal lunacy. It all makes sense now. The demon KKK rats just wanted to fund our greatest ally just so they can give our hard-earned tax dollars to nincompoops to keep them on the plantation. Good thing we figured out their globalist plot. I know that together we can raise enough money for Trump to repeal Obozocare and beat the rich old white man Biden and his crackhead son. With the help of our based blacks and hot conservative women like Caitlyn Jenner.
And of course, Zoomer Imperator adds, don't forget brave conservative warriors like Carolyn Borsenko standing up for the rights of all of us against the anti-human lunacy of CRT. These demon crats want a white power movement in America, not in our watch. This was when.
If I have anything to say about it,
this is when that broad was still kind of relevant. When she was. This is from a month ago almost. But Firebrand J also says the people are listening, not to anything in particular. They're just listening. And you responded, NSA people are listening.
They are. Never forget that. I heard just today that the Apple Corporation is now releasing a new update for iPhones. So if any of you morons have an Apple phone, I don't know why you would. The next update you get is going to feature some new software that's supposed to allegedly put pedophiles in jail.
Hmm.
Now, while that's a very
noble,
worthy, and worthwhile cause, the means of doing so raise some flags for the rest of us dissidents.
Well, is it about going through your pictures or something like that?
It is. They're going to analyze all of the images you have saved on your Apple device and identify CSAM and alert the feds. But it's pretty clear that this could, you know, just as easily be, all right, is that a swastika I see? Well, let me pass along your Apple ID, Mac ID, whatever they call the, you know, hardware level identification, along to the ADL, and set you up for long-term monitoring. Prevent terrorism, extremism, and hate. You know, all thanks to the partnership between the ADL and a subpoena from the FBI. Could happen.
Also,
technically, as far as I'm aware, where things stand when it comes to subpoenas, Apple and the FBI, if they receive a subpoena, then Apple will hand over all of a user's iCloud information. Now, typically, all of that will be encrypted. However, things that aren't encrypted include stuff like mail, SMS text messages, and if you have your iMessages backed up to your iCloud, Apple will save a decryption key for those messages in your iCloud, which means the FBI can decrypt your iMessages that are backed up, thus defeating the purpose of encrypting iMessage. So keep that in mind when you say, well, this is just for pedophiles. You know, I hate them. I hate them too. But don't let the fucking Apple Corporation update your phone to analyze all of your image files.
There's going to be a lot of problems and like weird cases where people are going to have images of their children playing or something, and what if the AI or whatever that's scanning through these images assumes it's child pornography? Just even putting our worries aside about political monitoring, like Apple and the FBI monitoring us for our political views, just even for tracking CP, like how the heck do they do that? Do they have actual like people like moderators going through the images, or is it all AI or what?
Please be of showing suspected CSAM for human review. I will confirm if this is CSAM, but I must see it first.
You know, you're gonna have Pajit looking through all of your baby's baptism photo.
This is not like I don't think our technology is good enough yet to just like detect CP right away through some AI.
Believe me, I wish it was.
Yeah, I wish it were, but it's not.
Like, you know, send all these people to the gallows after legal due process and conviction by a jury of peers. But something tells me that's not exactly how things are going to go with this specific development.
Yeah, well, I was just taking it on face value, and obviously there are a lot of implications beyond that. It's obvious like a sort of ruse, a facade, in order for Mossad to get into your pictures.
Because no one wants to be the guy that's against the anti-CP update.
Yeah, no, I think this is very intentional because it's fraught with, the negative implication.
But before we get too blackpilled and whatever about technology and
Ted-pilled,
let's go on to the next comment. I'm going to sort of summarize. I'm not going to read everything, but Zoomer Imperator says how he talks about, we were talking about headsets, and I got some cheapo Amazon gamer headset, and how I feel like a dork now because I have a gamer headset. But he was talking about his Turtle Beach headset and his experience with it. But I don't remember. There was something about, did we do something about Ebonic Shakespeare last episode? I don't remember. Because he's talking about the bit with the Ebonic Shakespeare had me jerking the mouse around with laughter while gooming. Got some great trick shots in a way that made me laugh more.
Based. What game were you playing?
It is probably Counter-Strike, huh?
Counter-Strike or call it Cowabunga?
Yeah, but do people play Cowabunga on PC?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know it's available, but is it popular? I feel like the go-to FPS game is still CSGO, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I assume that, but there's, I'm sure, probably like a decent number of people playing Call of Duty on their PC.
Yeah. COD 4 Pro Mod. Do you remember that? Did you ever play that on the PC?
Pro Mod? No.
It was, you know what? A good analogy perhaps is kind of like CSGO competitive, but for COD 4. It wasn't an official, like, option. It was something you downloaded, but it was like competitive style COD 4 games that you would play.
Cool.
Very big in Europe. Really big in Europe. I think it's called, you play, was it Search and Destroy? Like, it was basically like Counter-Strike, the one where you have to plant the bomb or something. But those are some memories. Actually, I didn't play Pro Mod. I played it after it was dead for a little bit just to see what it was like. But I know that people had some fun on there. So we're going to do a Zoomer Man compilation. We're going to combine all of his comments. And Zoomer Man says, I had been waiting, and we know you have been. And here's the podcast. And then he says, will there ever be a Learned Youths of Zyklon someday?
Perhaps. I think what you want to be on the lookout for is the whitened youths of Zyklon.
Mm. Well, I don't know what to say to that. He also says that he hated literature lessons in school because we're talking about Shakespeare and stuff and mandatory reading and our opinions on that. And he also says he doesn't consume cringe. And we know that because you're consuming this.
Well, that's good.
And this is not cringe, so. And Turbo Dolphin comments on William Shakespeare's play, The Merchant of Venice, which is what we were talking about, and I will talk about a little bit more later. And he says, oh God, 6 trillion canards. And Jonathan Fash says, TYH is Zoggers, Zog plus Poggers.
I hope that's a good thing.
I don't even know.
Zog usually makes things bad. So Zoggers sounds negative. I don't want to be Zoggers. I want to be Poggers.
Oh, and because we were on the theme of Shakespeare, Count Fistula says, Shakespeare will always be taught because Shakespeare was black.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of black, Aoki says, Nikkei has single-handedly compelled me to take Martin Bernal's Black Athena trilogy seriously. Seriously, mind you, but seriously.
I don't know how to take that. That's, okay.
Isn't the thesis, I haven't read it, but I think it's something like there's...
We was Kangs.
Yeah. But it's actually written by a white fella, right? It was written by a white fella?
I don't know.
It's like people don't realize how much Afro-Asiatic, whatever they call that, culture helped influence Greece. Oh my God. Racism.
Afro-Asiatic. There's usually a term they use. It's called Semitic.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you recall, the language spoken by the Ethiopian people is a
base
Afro-Semitic language. And when you talk about Afro-Asia...
It's Afro-Semitic. I thought it was the Black Hebrew Israelites.
Not quite. More like just regular Israelites.
No, I have an Afro and I'm Semitic.
The Jufro.
Oh, yeah.
So you're just like Seth Rogen.
Hate that human being. Joey Baloney says, Guyana, designated shitting colony.
Designated. So true.
Because we like to shit on Guyana, the world's weirdest country. It's a country in South America that has an oddly big proportion of Indian, like dot Indians in it.
Dots, feathers, colonists. Yeah. It's just a mess.
Oh, we're going to be talking about colonists later and settler colonialism, so that would be great. And then I think this is the last comment. Johnny Appleseed. I think I'll read this one entirely because it seems interesting. Sometimes I think about how some FBI agent has to listen to all of TRS, and then I wonder about what else they monitor. Is there a hierarchy? Like, do the veteran special agents at the Bureau get assigned to the Daily Showa and TYH? And the newbies get stuck listening to inferior podcasts like Fuentes' show or Scott Greer's podcast? At least being the agent assigned to TRS would have the potential to be entertaining. But being assigned to watch all the gripers would be just a slog. And Zoomerman...
I don't know, I'm with Zoomerman on this, personally.
He says, I would love to be paid to listen to podcasts. That's essentially all white-collar workers nowadays, it seems.
Yeah. You don't actually do work. If you can help it, you just listen to podcasts on the job site.
Yeah, we've noticed just how many jobs are just fake and stupid.
Oh well, you said you keep it to white collar. I'm talking about all collars. Like if you could help it, just slack on the job site as a blue collar worker, listen to Joe Rogan because you're a blue collar worker.
Nice stereotype there.
Well, it's not a stereotype. It's just a fact.
Is a sex worker called the dog collar or the fetish collar?
I don't know. The thought collar.
The thought collar. Yeah, I'm thought collar. I come from a thought collar.
Thought collar.
No, it's people wear those like dog collar thingies even in public. Well, that's been going on for a while. I don't know why I'm saying that.
Yeah,
you guys know
that's
that.
Been like a punk thing forever.
Yeah, I understand the punk sphere.
If you have like a spike, like stainless steel spikes on black leather. Now it's like, grown to like, ooh, woo, I'm a...
No, it's like...
I'm a whole...
No, because before, even though punk rock fashion was rooted in kind of...
Sodomy.
Yeah, well, unintentionally, like, the kids that were wearing it, they were just buying from this shop called Sex in London.
What?
Yeah, that's what it was called. And the person that started like the punk fashion, what was it, Malcolm McLaurin and Vivian Westwood, I think their name was. It was like fetish gear. But these kids weren't actually fetishists. They were just wearing it to be edgy.
And to offend.
Yeah, and adults. ended up just like being, it kind of even got detached from that. But now when you see someone in one of those collars, you know that they're actually a fetishist. Cause,
or wannabe fetishist.
Yeah, or wannabe fetishist, or they have an OnlyFans. You know.
You ever like encounter a wannabe fetishist?
I don't know. I don't. What? People who wear stuff like that? I don't know. Not on a personal level.
It's like people who put on the trappings of this
BDSM fanatic.
Yeah, BDSM lifestyle, but actually don't participate in it.
Oh no, I never.
It's like a type of femcel. That's like try hard for the look, but doesn't actually have any experience.
Yeah, maybe
Really bizarre. It's like
actually,
very,
I think
very pathetic.
When I was still red pilled, but when I would still hang around a lot of normie, or not normies actually, they were kind of weird people, but people in music scenes and people who are obviously left leaning or apolitical or whatever. I think there were probably a few girls who were like that. They would do the whole BDSM LARP, but they didn't actually do BDSM.
I think it's for the attention.
Yeah, it was because we're like doing industrial music and stuff. So,
I see. So everything about it was retarded.
Well, I'm not talking about. Well, I guess you probably think the industrial I listened to was degenerate too. I'm not talking about like
the music isn't degenerate. It's just like.
Well, no, they're different.
Awkward to go see a live performance of, like, guy turning knob.
Yeah, what you're thinking, there are different types of industrial. There's the original industrial.
Oh, there's the kind where you push button and the other kind
No, just listen. So I think you're probably thinking of stuff like Nine Inch Nails, right?
I refuse to listen to Nine Inch
Nails. Or maybe even Skinny Puppy, but I'm, like, talking about industrial where it's more like the throbbing gristle, weird stuff like noise music, basically. But for some reason, like, it's kind of wrong to call people like Nine Inch Nails industrial. Or maybe they're like industrial metal or industrial pop, and that they're inspired kind of by the aesthetic of industrial a little bit. But I'd rather be associated with noise music than like mall goth or like industrial metal or industrial rock.
If you say so, bro, live your life.
Yeah, we're talking about Cabaret Voltaire and stuff. We're not talking about Nine Inch Nails. If we did, it may be the first album, but even then, that was kind of sucked. I'm not a big Nine Inch Nails fan, not at all, really. Skinny Puppies.
When it came to the noise music, we've talked about this before. For me, I like heard Venetian snares, and it's like, all right, I've had enough.
Yeah, early Skinny Puppy was good, but still, that's like industrial inspired music. I feel, I don't know, genres are gay. I don't believe in genres.
Oh, you don't? You're a genre anarchist?
Yes.
Now, is it a genre anarchy or a genre nihilism?
Genre nihilism. People who always coin genres are like usually like music journalists describing things, and I don't like music journalists
at all. I don't know, this,
but I guess
the point of a genre to help like communicate a idea.
I guess. Well, I think
an idea of a sound that's like categorizable.
I mean, it has that function, but sometimes I feel like the categories are kind of off or stupid.
Sure, but that's like, that doesn't necessarily delegitimize the whole system.
No, not the whole. Yeah, I guess I would say it has obviously its practical purpose. In an ideal world, we just call it whatever. Nothing. But in the case of industrial music, that was coined by Throbbing Gristle. So that was a case of them calling their music industrial. So, like, the distinction between real industrial is, like, they want their music to sound like industrial equipment. like of modern industrial societies, whereas industrial rock or industrial pop or industrial metal is like, though that genre mixed in with like kind of slightly abrasive electronic music. Whereas the original industrial was like, let's make industrial sounds, like in the sounds you hear in modern in industrial societies, like, I don't know. Anyways, who cares?
Industrial music and its consequences have been an utter disappointment for the human race.
Well, you could say out of that more kind of, you know, Death in June, but yeah, he's gay, the main guy in Death in June. So that's a sign.
Death in Juneteenth.
Yeah, even though I'm not a big fan, but I listen to them. Death in June, you know.
Yeah, you acquired some physical copies.
Yeah, I already had a Death in June CD and vinyl. I had a vinyl of Burial, which was like their second release, I think, after their first. Yeah, it was their second release, and I also had a CD called Discriminate, which was like a compilation album. But then I got two tapes in. Two cassette tapes of Death in June, Rose Clouds of Holocaust, and The Brown Book. Those were two recent Death in June acquisitions.
I've still put off listening to Death in June. Just can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, some of it's really good.
I'm concerned that I'm really not going to like it. But
I like the really early stuff.
I also don't like the idea of liking it and the band being gay.
Yeah, that's kind of hard.
I think I'll just keep on passing up on the opportunity.
Yeah, but the thing is that Death in June, they went through so many different phases. Like they started off kind of like a post-punk band, and almost similar to Joy Division in the early 80s. And before Death in June even existed, actually, they were in a band called Crisis, which was like a left-wing political punk band.
Oh, that's gay.
Yeah, but then I think they got disillusioned with left-wing politics, which is based, and they started Death in June. And their first album was definitely more like post-punk. Pretty damn good. Some of the songs are pretty fucking good, I gotta admit. The second album and the third album are still kind of in that. I think the third album's more like kind of like new wave-ish. Dance music mixed with post-punk, kind of dark dance music. And then a few records later, they start going to their whole neo-folk thing, which is what they're mostly known for. So, you know, if you're a fan of Joy Division, you might want to try their first album if you want to get into them. It's kind of rough around the edges. I prefer that, but some people might not like that.
Well, you know me, I do like some Joy Division.
Yeah, so like if you like Joy Division or Susie and the Banshees or something like that, you probably like their first record, to be honest. I was listening to this band called Sex Gang Children.
What?
Yeah, the name is fucking shit. And that should have been a sign that this band's stupid.
Yeah, what was your first clue?
So like they're an early goth. When I mean goth, I'm meaning like post-punk that's kind of dark-ish, has the dark aesthetic. Their whole gimmick is like the singer sings like in high-pitched voice, and it sucks. I just don't like it, and I don't like the name.
Yeah, there's a lot to dislike there.
Yeah, I changed it to Susie and the Banshees for better stuff.
I really tried to get into their music, and I just couldn't. And I couldn't get into the look either. I don't know. I like the Zoomer goth look instead. I can't be like my parents.
No, I like the trad goth look, even though a lot of Zoomers are doing that too. A few.
I don't like it. It's too ugly.
I don't know. There's something about Susie and Sue that is very beautiful to me.
I just don't like the overwrought makeup and like the, you know, hit by lightning hairdo.
It's because you're gay.
No, I like a more traditionally feminine look. Sorry
yeah,
that I'm
like
not
like showing your tits and wearing a choker necklace.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, goth style was only kind of, it was somewhat tolerable for like the first year of its existence in the 80s and started just becoming stupid and retarded. It's like, why play dress up? I don't like people who play dress up too much like that. Like you're going to a fucking Halloween.
I think I might have told you this story before, but there was a point when I was like a really little kid, like maybe 5 or 6.
You call emos goth?
It was like that. This is before emo was a term.
Probably not. That's been around for like since the 90s.
Well, nobody said emo, as far as I knew, until several years later.
I guess how most people know emo, it wasn't really in common usage, in its modern usage, I guess. But
yeah, it's like people who were on the cutting edge of, no pun intended, of My Chemical Romance, what's another good example? Maybe some fans of Linkin Park were emo, but MCR was probably as far as like emo as a relevant term in my generation, it was that.
But this was before that's like a degeneration of what emo is. Calling Linkin Park emo is such a disgrace even to original emo bands. Not that I know a lot about
it. I don't care. Fuck them.
Linkin Park is so shit.
Before there was Justin Bieber jokes, there were jokes about emo kids.
Yeah, true.
Like I'm thinking back now in the like some of the earliest edgy jokes I would make were about emo kids like being gay and killing themselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's sort of getting away from what I wanted to mention, which was this story from my childhood where I saw like goths, not emos, but goths.
Mm.
Yeah.
The like late 90s, early 2000s mall goths.
Yes.
Yeah, those fuckers.
Like decked out in spikes, like maybe black and green hair, but mostly just black. Chain, like wallet chains and like superfluous metal loops on their on their pants that were like wannabe JNCO jeans, but not actually.
Oh, that's worse.
Very much mallcore goth. Nose rings and like corpse paint foundation.
Yeah.
And I always thought they wanted to hurt me. I thought they were like, they're like niggers, that they were like violent people.
But they're like this, they're like anorexics who cut themselves at night and.
Well, no, cause they weren't necessarily like anorexic. They just all, well, granted, like I was five, like
they're
going to
do a spell on you.
No, that they were just like going to like, you know, like push me to the ground and start kicking me and punching me, you know, because they like violence and they're brutish.
Yeah, that's funny.
I legitimately thought that. I thought that was like, you know,
it's not
the point
gay
of their look. And then my dad explains like, no, they just want you to think they're weird. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, all they want to do is freak you out because they think it's funny. It's like, so they don't want to hurt me? It's like, no.
Yeah.
No, they're just weirdos. And like my whole perspective on them changed immediately with that explanation. Like they went from like scary looking monsters to like dorks.
Yeah. They're not gonna hurt you.
They're just gonna like go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
Charge their phone. Charge their flip phone.
Charge their flip phone.
Eat hot chip and lie.
I wonder if there is a clan on CS 1.6 of like goth players. Mall goth players. That'd be funny.
CS source goth.
I'm so bad with what games are out now. So I just stick to what was out like 6 years ago or 8 years ago and it's still popular. So
That's all I know is CSGO. There's like other FPSs out there.
I did pull up the
what's Valorant? The current what the fuck is
stats,
that?
For Steam gameplay right now. Number one, Counter-Strike Global Offensive.
That's right.
Number two, Dota.
See, I don't even know what Dota is, really.
It's an unfun game that...
Yeah, I've just heard about it.
Boring people play.
Defense of the Ancients, right?
Yeah, that's what it stands for. But it also stands for monotony and autism. There's Apex Legends at number three.
See, like, what's that? I've heard, like, that's a...
I think it's another class-based shooter that wants to be...
Working class, you know, people can only have these guns, whereas the upper middle class...
The working class just gets your Palmetto State ARs, and, you know, rich people have your actual Colt brand AR-15s. You know, you have your in-between, like, upper middle class guy who's, like, big into guns, who has his autistic custom-built. It's just basically, you know, what AR you're coming out to battle with. No, it's class-based shooter, as in you pick a role, and that's the kind of player you are for the game. Like Team Fortress, which is another, like, the quintessential class-based shooter.
Yeah, yeah, I know, Sean.
Then there's PUBG, Player Unknown Battlegrounds, Grand Theft Auto 5.
Is this all time or of this year?
It's today.
Oh, today.
And there's your top five games niggas be playing on a Friday, August 2021.
Yeah. Because I've been playing Counter-Strike recently. Not very good. I don't play competitive. I just like I like the autism of public casual. Just like 15-year-old kids
He plays casual.
Going on the mics and just saying crazy shit.
Oh, that's always fun.
Yeah.
I remember my days of competitive Counter-Strike.
Did you play competitive?
I did. I had that's a little team with my friends from school.
Gay. Was this high school?
Yeah, it was high school.
Counter-Strike Global Offensive was out then? Well, you're in high school?
Yes.
You're a young little boy.
Sorry. You've been over this like a million times.
You're like a year younger than me. You're a little tiny person.
That's why you're the millennial and I'm the zoomer. Yeah. I told you there's more to this year cutoff than you realize. You're in a different generation and you're only a year older.
It did come out in 2012. That's true.
I still think the generational effects can't be ignored here.
Yeah, I was still in high school. But
technically, I've never played the other Counter-Strikes.
I didn't really either.
But you owned them.
Yeah, I did.
I did not. When those games were out, I wasn't old enough to play M-rated games, according to my parents. So that just goes to show... you know, another aspect of the generational divide. Anyway, let's not get wrapped up in that.
Let's talk about gaming. No, I'm just kidding.
If you want to talk about gaming, there's only one thing that is on my mind coming up, and that's Victoria 3, baby, coming out from Paradox Interactive next year in February. Oh, I'm going to be all over that.
Well, I was just looking at seeing how crazy professional CSGO is now. People are being stadiums with thousands of people watching them click a mouse.
Thousands of Polacks.
Yeah, it's crazy. And people are winning hundreds of thousands of dollars. Stupid. But
it is stupid.
That's why like I don't want to get involved in competitive because
so
I know
fucking fake.
Because I know it's gonna be this like retards who take it too seriously and
We were never like that tier, like competitive.
Because I did play competitive a little bit like 5 years ago when the last time I played video games. I'd always get people mad. Sometimes I would troll and
I don't know. I just wanted to have more fun and be serious.
Anglo's just like low-key global elite.
See, don't even know what that means. That's the high class.
Now he's playing. Now he's being coy.
See, that's the way how I hide it.
I know. I know you. Global elite? What's that? Couldn't be me.
Yeah. But, so we're going to go back to the old school of TYH, and I found a few academic articles that are particularly retarded.
Rate my commissar.
Yeah, good old days. I lost the other one. Shit, let me go back into my history. Because I don't want to start off with this one. Let's start off with the freshest article that I found. Published August 5th, so yesterday. Let's brace yourself for the title. Psychic Geographies of Queer Multiculturalism. Reading Fanon, Settler Colonialism, and Race in Queer Space.
Oh, not Fanon.
When I had to read them once, like a few years ago, I just didn't read it because I knew how just vile he was. Literally a CIA N-word. Literally.
Yes.
I think there is proof that he did something for the CIA.
If he wasn't so black as to absorb all light, he'd glow in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, let's read the abstract because I don't have access to this fresh article. It's like I can't find it anywhere. Zero articles have cited this. Obviously, it's only a day old. Utilizing Fanon's theories of psychic, social, and embodied processes of racialization and racism, this article examines Toronto's gay village as a site of queer settler multiculturalism. And it's
isn't that all of it?
Probably. And its impacts on Black and Indigenous lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, two-spirit, and additional, and in parentheses, LGBTQ2+, youth experiencing homelessness.
Wow, don't care.
That's a long sentence I don't give a fuck about.
Like, you just said so much shit, and I lost interest several words ago.
Yeah, I think the funniest part is not even trying to make sense of these things, just laughing at the buzzwords.
And yeah, lay them on me.
I build on Fanon's argument of cultural alienation, the collective unconscious, and white colonial anxiety, and desire to analyze current iterations of queer settler colonialism and anti-Black racism within the village. Specifically, I argue that the village maintains a collective queer multicultural unconscious through social interactions and forms of representation that seek to tightly control Blackness and indigeneity within queer space. That's a word I hate.
Damn, nigga, take a breath.
Yeah, no, it's...
Can a nigga get a comma?
Yeah. Well, no, like a comma wouldn't fit anywhere. It's just these are long buzzwords. Ugh. By placing Fanon in dialogue...
You're telling me there's no place for a semicolon in that bitch? Jeez.
This is using a lot of...
Nigga, that's a lot of words.
By placing Fanon in dialogue with Black and Indigenous studies scholarship and interviews with Black and Indigenous LGBTQ2+ youth, I represent how youth encounter and, to some extent, refuse the white and settler colonial queer multiculturalism in Toronto's gay village. Toronto's village.
Ah! Do you have the drop?
What drop?
Shut the fuck up! You fucking retard!
I could probably find it on my hard drive somewhere. Keywords, queer geography, critical race theory.
Like, condensed it down to two, one descriptor and one noun.
Black geographies. Topographical evidence of maps. Indigenous geographies. Urban geography and France Fanon.
Shit. They could have just said that and spared me the fucking aneurysm.
So I guess We're gonna reverse the clock back to 2010, the good old days, right? Things weren't so bad then, right? Well, no.
Or I wasn't reading shit like this.
Because you didn't have to, but I found I don't know, this title makes me laugh so hard. Oh yeah, and by the way, that article that we read, the abstract, is from Ray Rosenberg.
Oh, of course.
This is like 2016 over again. Oh my god. Yeah. But this one's funny is all it's called Settler Homo Nationalism.
No.
Was this based like homo fascism and death in June or something?
Oh no.
Theorizing settler.
It all comes full circle.
Theorizing settler colonialism within queer modernities.
How about we don't?
I mean, modernity is pretty queer. I gotta give him that.
Yeah, don't remind me. I definitely don't need you to do that.
But the title is funny. Homo nationalism.
Ugh.
I guess I could read it.
All right, so you have an abstract for this or what?
Yeah, it's very abstract. Actually, I think there's less. It's less of a word salad than the last one, but maybe I'm wrong. Let's just read it. Settlement conditions, the formation of modern queer subjects, and politics in the United States. That must be tags put in there. This essay newly interprets the settler formation of U.S. queer modernities inspired by Jasbir Puar's critique of homo nationalism. Based. I hate homo nationalism too.
Yeah, it's like I have a few critiques for you.
Poir argues that homo
more on the homo and less on the national.
Poir argues that homo nationalism produces U.S. queers as regulatory over the racialized and sexualized populations targeted within the imperial biopolitics of the war on terror. I explain homo nationalism.
That all comes back to fucking Arabs.
Yeah, because Arabs are more important.
Arabs are the queer race. And well, this is
when people were closer to the war on terror, people are always talking about Arabs. Now it's like black bodies, but now it's just exclusively black bodies. Before it was a lot of Arab stuff. I explained homo nationalism as a quality of U.S. queer modernities having formed within a colonial biopolitics in which the terrorizing sexual colonization of native peoples produces modern sexuality as a function of settlement.
Who cares?
Yeah, this essay reinterprets...
Nigga, you gay!
This essay reinterprets historical accounts at the intersections of queer, native, and colonial studies to show how a colonial biopolitics and modern sexuality relationally produce native and settler sexual subjects. I almost want to stop.
What is a fucking sexual subject? As opposed to a sexual coomer. Object?
That's the ideal sexual subject. Coomer. He's subjected to all the sexual desires.
Yeah. I mean, for crying out loud, it's just like assuming that anything that people did had a gay aspect to it, like all the time. What if like Europeans just wanted to make money off of profitable settlements in another continent and it had nothing to do with sodomy?
Like,
oh wow, this is a really radical departure from the academic consensus, apparently.
Well, there's
colonization isn't about butt fucking. Get over it. It's like when this is how homosexuals are. It's just like, this socio-historical process. That's how can I interpret this through a lens of faggotry.
Queering Natal, settler logics and the disruptive challenge of Zulu polygamy.
Oh, you know what settlement of Ontario reminds me of? Butt sex. Here, let me talk about that for a bit.
Mining giants, indigenous people, and art challenging settler colonialism in Northern Australia through story painting. Yeah, that's going to stop it.
Yes.
It's really, your gay shit. Little finger paints are going to stop a whole system.
Stop a country that already rules you.
That's been ruling you for like three fucking hundreds of years.
The only country that's existed on this continent.
My finger paints are going to stop it. My little...
Well, it's challenging it, but like the challenge is like
I don't even know what story painting
holding
is.
Back laughter.
I assume it has something as stupid as finger painting.
Yeah, that was my first thought as well. Considering these people never invented a brush.
Yeah. Finger painting against colonialism. Take that, cracker. Okay, why don't you write your feelings down? Paint your feelings down while we control you, my nigga.
No. Please don't sleep in the middle of the road.
Yeah, please. I beg you. Am I, oh.
This is like the third pair of tires I had to buy this week.
Look at this stupid one. Did I read this already? Am I going to become famous when I get my boobs done? Surgery and celebrity and Gigi Gorgeous.
No.
This is everything.
Oh, no.
What's Gigi Gorgeous?
That's the tranny.
What is that?
That's the I oh, yeah. With the dog.
Oh, yeah. I know. Dang, this person.
This was the person who went from, like, I'm you know, a guy to you know, fag.
To white girl.
To white girl to white fucking woman. Dog. White trans women fucking dog.
You know what? That's probably the case.
Oven.
People always talk about, like, white women effing dogs, but it's just been trans women the whole time. Trans white women.
Into the oven it goes.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I'm going to purchase this. It's $40 for this edition of...
Oh, hell no.
From an academic article written in 2010.
Fuck that.
Not an article.
Give them $40.
Actually, no, it's it's the whole volume.
I don't give a shit. I will slap you if you give these people $40.
You know what? I have a time for a kvetch. We're going to go very old school. Academic book prices are gay. We all know that.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. And sometimes I really need to buy a book that is an academic book that costs a decent amount of money. And I've noticed is that when I've purchased stuff from Amazon for either Cambridge University Press or Oxford University Press, the binding is so shit. Even though I spent like $40 or $50 on the book. The binding is like worse than any fucking thing. And I realize it's because they use print on demand. Why am I paying $40 for a shitty print on demand book? So I just stopped buying books off of Amazon.
Because you are a simp.
Yeah, I got simped. It's because I bought this
you
like cool.
You are a paycock.
Well, I needed to write notes in it. I don't know. I thought it was going to be. But it's a total fucking scam. Because at least, like, if you're going to spend over $20 on a book, you're going to expect, okay, they'll probably put some work into, like, the binding and make it usable. But no, this is shit. This is literally the same quality of book that you get when you do self-publishing through Amazon. I noticed that, too. Like, I got a Stanford University Press book, not even, like, an obscure academic book, but some book by a philosopher off of Amazon. And it was printed by Stanford University Press. But then I realized that it actually wasn't. It was a ready-to-print book printed by Amazon. It wasn't actually printed by Stanford University Press. I guess Stanford University Press is probably contracting Amazon. Whenever you buy something off of Amazon, it's going to be a, whatever it's called, ready-to-print.
A cheap piece of shit.
A cheap piece of shit. Because usually, like, a Stanford University Press book is pretty high quality. And I'm, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll spend $15.
Yeah, you'd expect, right? It's like...
But then I got this book. It was, and like, this is obviously a fucking ready to print bullshit book. And I know that Stanford University Press is not this low quality. So just don't buy books from Stanford University Press or Oxford or Cambridge on Amazon. Hopefully they don't do that when you buy it from them. Oh, the funniest thing is that in the book it said printed in Great Britain. And then, like, you know, that's a part of, like, the text in the book. But when you go to the very back, it's, like, printed in 2021 in California. Like, because it was printed the day you bought it. Printed on August 2nd. Like, yeah, this is a scam. This shouldn't be legal. Anyways, go on.
I had one one book that I own that's a made-to-order print. But it was actually made, like, high quality. I had to order it from Johns Hopkins University Press. And they actually do their own printing, is at least when I purchased the book. It was titled The Origins of Rhetoric in Ancient Greece.
Hmm.
And they, you know, wasn't in print, but if you bought a copy, they'd print one for you. And they were able to do that in-house, as far as I'm aware. So the book's quality was just fine. No problems at all.
Yeah, this one's crap, the ones I've got. Because I have, like, real Stanford University Press. Like, I'm comparing them. It's like kind of the text is kind of pixelated slightly if you look very closely, and the cover is slightly pixelated too.
Really?
Yeah,
that is so cheap.
Yeah, I mean, it's readable, I guess, but no, it sucks. I don't want to say anything too vulgar. I'm sorry.
It's shite.
Yeah.
It's full and shit.
I don't know. Maybe it was probably like the book I got from Cambridge University Press, where it says, like, on the title page, like next to the title page, like printed in Great Britain. And you go to the last
bollocks.
And I go in the back, and it says made in the USA, printed in San Bernardino, California, 5 days ago.
Like
it gives you this exact date. It's always, I've noticed, it's either San Bernardino or Las Vegas. Fucking Jesus Christ. Anyways, anything else? So my trick around that is if I'm buying through Amazon, I just buy a used edition that's like very good condition. Usually it's not a ready to print. It's an actual edition, and it's a lot cheaper.
There's this website, Abe Books, that's always been very reliable for like used texts that you need for class, what have you.
Yeah, and autism.
I'm sure it's a very strong facilitator of advanced autism.
Yeah, well, because that case of the Cambridge book that I spent like $40 or $50 on, it was like this hard to find book. Like, I don't even think my school library had it, so I was curious about it. About like Indo-European mythology, like Indo-European mythology. When I tried it, and I got it, and like the one. The fucking binding was so shit, and two, it was over my head. Because it's all like this deep linguistic shit that I don't know about. I'm like, oh, I thought this was going to be up mythology. Anyways.
Press F.
Yeah. But. Man, that money could have. I could have bought a few records with that.
You could have.
I know that was a year and a half ago, but still, it's hurting me. Because now I'm starting to buy vinyl records. I feel your pain.
It's wasting money on dumb books you won't read when there's vinyl to buy.
That you won't listen to. No, actually, I listen to everything I get.
Yeah. Because that's actually fun.
I used to make fun of vinyl just to be edgy. But I've come to appreciate it, not even so much for the sound. I mean, yeah, it sounds better sometimes. Sometimes I can't tell the difference, to be honest.
But yeah, I'm not an audiophile. Yeah, I'm not like the collection of it.
But it's nice making it. Like it kind of forces you to listen to the whole album, and you have to turn it into like an event. It's not something you're not listening to music in the background. Like, it's just noise in the background.
Right.
It's like you have to concentrate on it and think about it. It's right there. You look at the artwork. Sometimes they have lyrics, and a CD kind of does that too. A CD is sufficient.
Sufficient, but I like the
big ass,
the bigger size of the cover.
Yeah,
of the jacket, and any such artwork that comes with it. You know, that's why I like it. Also, CDs, like, you know, there's less you can do with what you put on them in terms of more aesthetics.
Yeah.
Whereas with the vinyl labels, you can do some more artistic stuff with them.
Yeah, you can, I think, in the mass-produced stuff, but there's a lot of stuff on the more indie labels, the CDs, and they like do the digipacks, I think they're called, or they're kind of like mini record. It's like a version of a record sleeve, basically, but for a CD. There's some creative ones that I
have.
It could be like in a book or like a fake book or something. I don't know. It can't. It's possible, but I feel like with vinyl, it's almost always cool. Whereas with CD, a lot of it's not cool. It's just like in a jewel.
Well, it's like part of what you're paying for, right? They put that into the price.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm happy to pay that because I like the music and I want to give the creators some money. And they made this cool, like, special edition that looks nice. And, you know, you can appreciate it in more ways than you can just buying a MP3.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't, you know, if I'm in the mood for paying for music at all, then sure. I've never purchased an MP3 before.
I've purchased a FLAC recording.
Oh, my God. It's only because it was in FLAC.
Actually, no. I just wanted to support the artist.
But you did go for the FLAC. I mean, I would too.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounded better, I guess, maybe, but...
Get my motherfucking money's worth. It's like, I ain't getting anything prone to loss. I need that FLAC, baby.
Yeah.
Take up all my fucking hard drive.
Oh, you know what's funny about Henry Rollins?
Nothing.
He's a vinyl collector, like a huge vinyl collector.
So like anybody born in that generation. Okay.
No, yeah, no, but like real, like huge, like he's really into it. And he has like a $200,000 speaker system.
Yeah, I guess you could do that when you're Henry Rollins.
Yeah. Though I could appreciate his music taste. He has some deep cuts of like really weird shit.
I can appreciate the finer points of homosexuality.
He's not gay, okay?
Yes, he is.
He's not.
He's a big old fag.
Well, he's a fag, but he's not actually gay. And plus, Black Flag was not good when he was in it. Only the first EP of Black Flag. Yeah, Black. There was a cover band, there was like a gay band called Black Fag. There was that they did Black Flag songs.
It was like a tribute.
Yeah, come tribute to Black.
Yeah. Oh my God, come tribute band.
But the first EP is pretty damn good. I'm like, man, this is from 77 or 78. This is like pretty hardcore shit for that era. And then after Keith Morris left, I think his name was, the original singer, it's like, yeah, Black Flag sucks. But that first EP is pretty damn good. You know.
No, I don't. That's another one I've continued to put off listening to.
Just listen to it.
I know you've suggested
it. Doesn't have Henry Rollins on it. Nervous Breakdown. I used to have a shirt when I was like 13 of the Nervous Breakdown. It's kind of
I'll do it if I feel like
it. It's an edgy fucking cover for a CD. It's a guy like putting a gun to his head and about to kill himself, and his family's like dead on the. Wait, no, that's the wrong one. That's Family Man. It's a guy like having a nervous breakdown in class about to throw the chair at a teacher. And I thought that was funny and edgy. It's like some kid raging in class about to attack the teacher with a chair.
Nah.
Yeah, but after that, it's not worth listening to. Well, it's okay, but I don't listen to that. A lot of punk I don't really even listen to.
Pearl Jam did that theme better.
Pearl Jam. I mean, I gotta choose Black Flag over Pearl Jam any day.
Boring.
Like, come on, Pearl Jam. Like, what the?
It's like. Nice to listen to.
I never liked that 90s alternative stuff, like I guess grunge or whatever, but also just alternative rock like Alice in Chains. Like, what the? I don't like that stuff.
I do like the alternative.
Yeah.
That's like this is like our point of difference here. We're like mostly in agreement when it comes to a lot of punk and then post-punk. Then you get into like alternative versus hardcore, and then it's just like we go our separate ways.
Yeah, well, that early '90s stuff. I mean, I guess some of the bands I listen to fit into that early '90s alternative, technically, in a very broad sense. Like My Bloody Valentine was fucking great.
They were a band back then.
Yeah. Not,
I have no idea when they started.
Not Bullet for a Valentine, but My Bloody Valentine. Everyone gets that confused. The Shoegaze Band.
I'm struggling here.
Okay. Anyways. Yeah, like there's that. I mean, it's still like not my very favorite, but you know, come on. My Bloody Valentine, Loveless. It's classic. But anyways, is there anything else you want to talk about?
I didn't have anything pressing.
I'm going to tell you guys a compromising secret to me about me. So I wanted to say a funny pun when Nikkei said pressing. Like, what pun should I say? And the only thing that could come to my mind was a tofu press I used to have. But that's not...
What is a tofu press?
It's when you buy tofu. Tofu, like when you buy it, it's submerged in water.
It's in a block. Yeah, I've seen them.
And so you take it out, but like the blocks is like, it's like a sponge. It soaks up the water, and you want to get that water out so it could soak up the flavors of whatever you're cooking it with.
So you squeeze,
you get like this, it's like a tofu press. It presses the tofu and gets the water out. I used to have
them. I see. It's like a duck press for the soyum.
What's a duck press?
A duck press is a very aristocratic piece of kitchenware that you can use to press the good juices out of a duck.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like it's for the soyum.
Yeah, people who don't eat protein. These things are from an animal.
The cheapest one I found is $1,500 for a duck press.
Yeah, that's about right. Obviously, I don't own one. I just know they exist.
There's one that is $28,000.
If you have the chance to inherit a duck press, don't pass up.
But I don't know how much a used one is, though. It might not be. There's this one on Etsy. It's like a shitty one from the 50s that's $67, but it's not like it's not fancy though, so maybe that's why.
Here's the Wikipedia description. First, a duck, preferably young and plump, is asphyxiated to retain the blood. Then the duck is partially roasted. Its liver is ground and seasoned, and the legs and the breast are removed. The remaining carcass, including other meat, bones, and skin, is then put in a specially designed press similar to a wine press. Pressure is then applied to extract the duck blood and other juices from the carcass. Extract is thickened and flavored with duck's liver, butter, and cognac, and combined with the breast to finish cooking. Which sounds absolutely delicious.
Canard à la presse. Canard. Oh, man.
Yes. Anti-Semitic canards. Yeah.
On the press.
I press them.
Our press isn't really filled with many anti-Semitic canards.
I wish there were more anti-Semitic canards in our press.
I've never had...
That's like the height of accomplishment for the Stormer.
I haven't had duck. I haven't eaten duck. I don't know what it's like.
You've never had any duck?
Like, no, I haven't. I said it.
Wow. You gotta try that, man. Duck is a good meat.
How about you duck these nuts?
Oh, shit. God damn. I didn't even see that coming.
Is that salmon? No. Oh, salmon sounds so good right now. Sorry, I'm hungry. I'm starving. Salmon teriyaki. Oh my gosh.
Holy my lord. Anyways,
are you gonna like squeeze a fish onto your block of tofu?
Get the fish juice.
Yeah, like
raw salmon fish.
You put a raw salmon on top of the tofu when you press it down.
God. Mandarin pressed duck. What's that? Anyways, my name is Anglo, and with me I have Nikkei.
Thank you for listening.
Signing off. Have a good day.
Hail victory.
How do you say it in Greek again?
Hieriniki.
Bye.